Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm your host, Belinda Ellsworth, and I'm really excited about our guest today. I have Chester Santos with me, and he is the International Man of Memory. He left an impression on all corners of the earth. With his unique ability to not only demonstrate extraordinary feats of the mind, but also educate others to do the same, this U.S. memory champion is widely regarded to be the world's leading memory skills expert. Through his entertaining and educational television and movie appearances, professional seminars, and best-selling books, Chester has helped millions of people around the world to realize the benefits of an improved memory and sharper mind. It is my pleasure to welcome Chester to our show today.
Thank you so much for having me, Belinda. I am excited to talk with you today.
Yes, I am as well. So memory is so important because it helps us in what we're doing and how we make connections and just in our work in general. And it is something that people do struggle with a bit. So I'm really anxious to sort of dive into this and hear about some specific skills that we can all improve on. But why don't we just start out by fill us a little bit in this bio and tell us about you. Let's get to know you. And how did you get on this journey? How did you even discover that you had this incredible skill?
Yeah, so how I ended up doing what I do now was sort of random. I have a degree in psychology from UC Berkeley, which is related to the field of memory. However, I ended up getting a master's degree in software engineering, was working as a software engineer in Silicon Valley. But one night I happened to catch a segment on ABC's 2020, that evening news program. They had a segment on the United States National Memory Championship, and it just sparked my interest because I would often get the comment from people, wow, you have a really good memory. So with those comments just kind of in the back of my mind, when I caught that segment about this United States Memory Championship, I thought maybe I could do well. But when I looked into what the best people in the country were scoring in the various events, memorizing hundreds of names, hundreds of digits, decks of playing cards in just minutes, I quickly found out that although I might have been above average to start out with, I wasn't on that level. So that's what I had to do. That's when I started researching, okay, how can one magnify their memory ability from where it's currently at? I experimented with many different techniques, found what seemed to be working best for me personally, until eventually I did manage to win the United States Memory Championship. And since then, I've spent the last 13 plus years training other people around the world, now in more than 30 different countries, on how they can develop powerful memory skills and use them to become more successful in one's career, personal life, and also to help out any kids or grandkids that they might have in school.
Absolutely. So a lot of people will say, oh, I have a horrible memory, and they just seem to accept that and move on, or they don't realize really how much that can be beneficial to them. So let's just talk a little bit about what having a really good memory can do for you.
Oh, it's beneficial in so many different ways, in that memory is really a fundamental part of learning. So when you improve your ability to remember things, it will have a dramatic positive impact on multiple areas of your life. It's going to fuel your professional as well as personal development. It can make you much more productive at work. A lot of people are looking the same things up over and over again. As I mentioned, I used to be a software engineer. A lot of software engineers will have reference books at their cubicle. They find they're looking up the same commands, directories over and over again. If you would just take the time using the techniques that I teach to commit that to memory, in the long run, you will save so much time, be so much more productive, not just engineers, other areas as well, processes, procedures. A lot of people are thinking to themselves, who sent me the email? When did they send it? What approximate date? So they can find the information. But if you would just commit it to memory, again, it's very, very useful. Presentations, when you can at least minimize the amount of notes that you use, you're going to be a more effective and persuasive speaker. I've worked with a lot of trial attorneys, for instance, over the years, when they give opening and closing arguments and have to hit on the key facts of the case. Okay, this was the blood alcohol level. This was the date. These were the names of the people involved. When they're looking through a bunch of notes to get all of that exactly right, they lose eye contact with the jury, lose the jury's attention. So they're more persuasive if they can commit a lot of that to memory. One of the really big ones, I think, that everybody in your audience would be able to relate to, remembering names to get more out of business networking, to build better relationships with people in general. So that's a huge one. We can talk about tips for names today if there's any time for that. And then also in today's business world, you know, if we're honest with ourselves, the average person isn't using their memory very much. We're becoming very dependent on electronic devices. There's a lot of dangerous digital dependency out there. But on the flip side of that, what this creates is an opportunity in the business world to really set yourself apart, become more impressive to people when you can better demonstrate your knowledge and your expertise by showing that you actually know your stuff when you have some memory skills training. And just a little bit really does go a long way, because it's an area that people really are not working on too much these days.
I would agree. I know as a professional speaker, I love it that I never use notes, like, ever. So I go in completely prepared with whatever that company's data is, or what their selling points are, what the selling points of the product is. Like, I know it. So then I can stand up there and do that conversation. Like you said, I love that persuasive conversations, persuasive selling. It's when you're able to do that without a break in that energy level or concentration, it's just much more persuasive. That's all there really is to it.
Oh, that's huge. That's so cool that you are able to do that. Definitely, you're more persuasive. You describe a situation where you're a speaker. That is a really good use case. Along the same lines, it could be used meeting with, if you're some sort of consultant, for instance, meeting with clients and potential clients, doing the same thing. Here are 5-10 key things I learned about you and your company in my research. Here are 5-10 key things I learned about your competitors. Here are 5 ways as to how myself and my services in particular are a perfect match for you. When you're able to do this, maintain eye contact with the person, they're just very, very impressed. Again, especially nowadays when most people aren't able to do this, or at least don't put forth that effort. So you really show that you care. You show that you're the expert. People have more confidence in you and your abilities. It can be very, very beneficial.
I agree. I love that. And I think I wouldn't say, I'm sitting here wondering, I wonder how I would do, but like, I've seen where people take decks of cards or suddenly a whole stack of names. And I don't know how well my skills are in that, but I do know that I can look over a complete document and read. Like, a lot of times I just prep on an airplane, and then when I get there, like, I can remember their comp plan, like a compensation plan for the sellers, how much money they make, what's their commissions, what their top selling items are, what the prices are of those items. Like, so I do have a really good memory, and I'm curious, and I have been curious, like, that's probably a skill that you develop and you don't even realize you develop, or do some people just have it better than other people? Like, what's your experience with that?
Definitely. So some people are going to be more naturally inclined towards memory, just as some are more inclined towards music or sports, right? In various areas. I was, as you describe, it sounds like you are as well, just pretty good naturally at remembering. I guess really what it came down to is I just had my own way of creating a connection in my mind between something that I was trying to commit to memory or learn and something that I already knew. I didn't have any formal training
Right.
Before, you know, I went into this as a field and before I started competing in memory competitions, but I just had my own way of doing it. So some people are more naturally inclined toward memory skills. But the good news is that if you're one of those people out there that doesn't really have a good way of committing presentations, facts, figures, names to memory, there are things that you can learn. Anyone can learn to do them, and they're going to have a really big impact on your ability to remember things. And again, this will give you a huge advantage nowadays in many different ways.
Awesome. Well, I hope, let's go through a couple of our other questions, but I do want to come back to that because I'd love you to just give a little example or a couple little pointers. That'd be so much fun. So let's talk about how your business has shaped your lifestyle today.
Yeah. So, you know, again, I used to work in Silicon Valley as a software engineer. I guess, you know, I did enjoy it a lot, and that would, if I didn't do what I do now, that would probably be my second choice. I always did enjoy math and science. There's a lot of problem solving in software engineering. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty low stress job as well. Well, it depends on where you work, actually. Software can be stressful in certain places in Silicon Valley. But I think the main thing that I was unsatisfied with was the fact that all of my work, all of my efforts were just going towards a company and towards products that I might not have necessarily been interested in. In my case, I was actually working on products that only other engineers use as well. So it wasn't something like, you know, games or a mm-hmm. web browser or, you know, something that the average person out there, you would tell them what it is and they would say, oh, I use that. That's so cool. It was really, really technical software that I was working on, again, only used by other engineers. So that was the part of it that I did that I guess I wasn't satisfied with. And now that I'm working for myself and I can directly see the impacts of my efforts, you know, when I give a presentation and people come up to me afterwards and are saying, oh my God, this was amazing. I really thought that I had a very bad memory, but I can't believe that with just using this approach, I'm able to do these amazing things with my memory. I've had people, you know, of course, write me emails and write me messages on social media telling me about how now their kids are doing better in school after having gone through my training program. So it's just very rewarding to do the work and directly see the impact of that. And also, the harder I work, I can immediately see the beneficial impact to my career overall, whereas that might not necessarily be the case when you are working for someone else.
Absolutely. That's awesome. And I love how you put that. Like, you're really good at what you did and you did enjoy it, but it's when you're not really passionate about that thing that you're working toward, I can see why that would make a huge difference. You know, at the end of the day, we really like to be passionate about what we're working on or promoting or anything. It's interesting. Because I do think there could be some satisfaction in being really good at something, but at the end of the day, it's that passion, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
So let's talk then about your superpowers. Obviously, we know one of them, but has there been any others that have allowed you to take this skill set, your ability for memory, and then have really learned to take that into a business platform? So that's a skill in itself, you know what I mean, is taking what you're passionate about and then learning how to monetize that. So what would you say some of your other superpowers are that have really helped you in really turning this into a business?
Yes, I would have to say that I'm not really sure if I went about things in the right way, in a way that I would necessarily recommend to other people as far as taking this skill, this ability, and turning into a business. What I can say that helped me probably the most, more than anything else, is just hard work and perseverance. And I would say being strategic about things. I'll tell you how I went about it. Okay. And again, I want to be upfront in that it might not be that necessarily the best approach. So I first started coming up with a curriculum, like, okay, how I have this skill now, how can I teach it to other people? And I came up with, you know, a 1-hour keynote speech and then a 1-day workshop. And the 1-day workshop was really the bread and butter, the way I was able to make money on a monthly basis selling workshop tickets. And then later, the keynote speaking came later. Now, in order to build credibility as not just someone who is really good at remembering things himself, a United States memory champion, but as someone that can teach the skill to others, my strategy was to do things for low cost or no fee in the beginning until I was really able to build up my resume more as a, more as a speaker, more as a teacher. For instance, I remember early on, I did Harvard University. I had written to them for a couple of years, at least communicating with various people over at Harvard. But I ended up agreeing to do it for only expenses, just basically travel expenses. They ended up having me go out there and do a huge, 1-hour presentation for hundreds of students. It was held over at Harvard Law School, and then students that wanted to could sign up for more in-depth 1- and 2-day workshops after that. So I ended up doing that for just travel expenses. But then I was able to say, hey, I have been a speaker over at Harvard University. I've worked with students over at Harvard University. So that was one thing. So basically just things like that early. I did Stanford, Berkeley, slowly building up my resume at no fee or low fee. Until then, my resume was just pretty solid, and then I was able to start charging more and more over the years. So that's, I guess, kind of a brief outline of how I went about turning it into a business.
And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. People still do that. Like, even in, so someone opens up this amazing cookie shop, let's pretend, of gourmet or designer cookies, or, you know, a strategy for them definitely is to go and give away a dozen or half a dozen here, there, you know, so people see, like, wow, these are incredible. So that's still a strategy. When I first started out as a speaker, I decided it was really funny. I kind of thought the same thing, but then I had a friend of mine tell me it wasn't until she started really upping her price that people took her serious. So I thought, okay, straight out of the gate, I'm going to say this is my price. It wasn't outrageous because I hadn't built that resume, as you said, but I did pick it, and I was amazed at how many people went like, oh, okay, like, then you must be pretty good if you're able to charge this price. It was an interesting thing. And then I stuck to that price for a while until I was getting so booked. I'm like, okay, I need to increase my price because the demand was higher. So when the demand's higher, you increase your price. So I don't think there's a right or wrong way. I think that building a resume is value for sure, and people do need to understand that. So I think that's good, probably advice on both spectrums for our listeners trying to figure that out.
Cool. Yeah, I hope that's helpful. Again, I just don't know if I had the best way to go about things. There's probably a more optimized way to go about it. But that was my methodology. And again, it was very difficult in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I may have just had bad luck in that I happened to win the United States Memory Championship in 2008. And I wanted to start it as a business right away, helping other people to develop memory skills, because I actually at the time was getting a lot of media attention. Mm-hmm. So, you know, within a week of winning the championship, they wanted me on CNN for one of their morning shows. So I wanted to really leverage all of the media attention that I was getting. So I dived right in. I actually quit my job as a software engineer and dived right into trying to build the speaking and training into a career. So maybe, again, that might not be the best option for some people, but that's what I did because I really just wanted to leverage the momentum
sure.
that was going at the time. However, 2008 ended up being not really the best year to start a new business with the whole economic
right.
Kind of crash we had at the time. So it was hard in the beginning, but hard work and perseverance over the years paid off.
Oh, that is great. So we'll do these real quick. I want to do quick, like two rapid fire questions. And then I want to talk about some memory skills before we kind of go to the last part of our interview. So outstanding accomplishment.
Definitely it's winning the United States National Memory Championship. It was incredibly difficult that when I won. Nowadays, it's even more difficult. It is basically, you know, consider it like the Memory Olympics.
Wow.
People, you know, train for it full time year for many, many years in order to even have a chance to win it. For instance, I used to memorize a deck of cards, the whole 52 card shuffled deck in a little bit under 90 seconds. Nowadays, there are people that can do it in even less than 30 seconds. So just like in physical wow. sports where the world records keep getting pushed, you know, it's people are pushing the limits of physical, human physical ability. The same happens in terms of memory ability in the United States Memory Championship and the World Memory Championship. So that's an accomplishment that I'm very proud of, mm-hmm. that had a very major impact on my life and has really allowed me, it's definitely helped me to build my career and to help people all over the world.
So give us an idea, like how long was that competition?
Oh, so the United States Memory Championship is only one day. It's only a one-day competition held annually in various locations depending on the year. Nowadays, they hold it at MIT, Massachusetts Institute mm-hmm. of Technology over on the East Coast. It's only one day, like 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., just a full day of hardcore memorizing, but you need to really train for at least the entire year, but realistically, for many years just to compete. So all of the pressure is on you to do well on that one particular day.
Got it. And biggest challenge that you faced and how did you work through it?
Yeah, the biggest challenge I have faced is really just turning this into a business and getting through those rough early years, I would say 2008 through 2010. Mm-hmm. And then things started to get better and better from there. So I needed to push through the difficult years in order to eventually make it to where I am today.
So give us some ideas. Take us through a little bit of some memory tips, or you can even talk about the names. Like, let's have some fun with this for a few minutes before we sort of close out our interview.
Yeah, I'd love to go through an interactive exercise with you that your audience can follow along with. I'll just guide you through it. It'll be up to you whether or not you want to take up the challenge. It won't really matter. The point is just to have everyone try to go through the exercise mentally. So I'm going to give you a long series of random words. The word list is going to be monkey, iron, rope, kite, house, paper, shoe, worm, envelope, pencil, river, rock, tree, cheese, and dollar. Now, how most people would commit this to memory, they would just read it over and over again, recite it to themselves over and over again, rote memorization. Instead, we're going to use a different approach. I'm going to guide you through a visual Just do your best to see in your mind what I described to you. That's it. Just relax, have fun with it. And I think it should be easy. I'm sure your audience will enjoy trying to follow along. So the first word I had given you was monkey. I'd like for you to simply visualize a monkey, all right, in your mind. You see this monkey dancing around. It is making monkey noises. Ooh, 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 whatever a monkey would sound like. Mm-hmm. I'm working on that monkey impression, but the point is to see and hear the monkey. The monkey now picks up a gigantic iron, maybe like you would iron your clothes with. So the monkey is dancing around with his gigantic iron. The iron starts to fall, but a rope attaches itself to the iron. Maybe even feel the rope, really interact with it. Maybe it feels sort of rough. You look up the rope, you see the other end of the rope is attached to a kite. It's flying around in the air. Maybe you try and touch that kite. The kite you see now crashes into the side of a house. Really see it smash into that house. You can just see this like a movie or cartoon playing in your head, however you can best visualize it. House was next. It's covered in paper. This house is completely covered in paper. See all of that paper. A shoe appears out of thin air. It starts to walk all over that paper. Maybe it's messing it up as it's walking on it, that shoe. See that? The shoe smells kind of badly, so you decide to investigate and see why. You look inside of the shoe and you find a smelly worm crawling around inside of there. Really see that smelly worm. The worm jumps out of the shoe and into an envelope. Maybe it's going to mail itself or something. Envelope was the next word. Out of nowhere, a pencil appears. It starts to write all over the envelope. Maybe it's addressing it, that pencil. The pencil now jumps into a river, and there's a huge splash like you would never expect to see when it hits the river. The river is crashing into a giant rock. The rock flies out of the river and into a tree. This tree is growing cheese. You probably haven't seen a tree like that. This one's growing cheese. And out of the cheese comes a dollar. The last word was dollar. Now I'm going to run through this in about 20, 30 seconds, replay through it, and you'll just replay through this little story in your mind. So we had a monkey. What was the monkey dancing around with? It was dancing around with an iron. What attached itself? It was a rope. The other end of the rope was attached to the kite. What did the kite crash into? It was a house. The house was covered in something. What was it? It was paper. Something walked on that paper. It was a shoe. What was crawling in the shoe? It was a worm. The worm then jumped into an envelope. What wrote on the envelope? It was a pencil. The pencil then jumped into what? It was a river. The river was crashing into the rock. That rock flew into a tree. What was it growing? Cheese. And what came out? A dollar. So now it should be pretty easy for you to recall the entire random list of words by simply going through the story in your mind. Each major object that you see in the story will give you the next word. So, Belinda, it's up to you if you want to attempt to recite those or not.
All right. I'm going to give it a whirl.
Oh, okay. All right. Go ahead. Take your time.
So we've got a monkey, iron, rope, kite, house, paper, shoe. This is the part that didn't make sense to me in my story. So the shoe, then we've got an envelope.
Yeah, so just what was crawling in the shoe?
Oh, gosh, the worm. That's the part that was like, okay, so the worm is crawling in the shoe, then the worm goes in the envelope, then the pencil, river, rock, tree, cheese, dollar.
Awesome. Really well done. Amazingly done under pressure there. you didn't know I was going to spring that on you, put you on the spot in your own interview. So really well done. And I'm sure if you just mentally play through that story, maybe one or two more times, you would even be able to recite that very quickly backwards. So I think if your audience follows along with that, they will get most, if not all of those words 100% correct. That's called the story method. It's just one of many techniques that memory champions like myself use to pull off what, you know, at first seem like amazing memory feats, but there's nothing different about my brain compared to everyone else's. I've just learned these types of techniques that are powerful and effective, put in a little bit of practice. Now, this doesn't just apply to random words. This could be key points of a presentation or represent, you know, things that you want to, those 5-10 key things about a company that you want to mention in a potential client meeting. Quickly, to make it a little bit more clear, if I were going to give a talk about healthcare in the United States, my first image might simply be of a stethoscope that the doctor uses to check your heartbeat. That's just going to represent the broad topic of healthcare. First thing I might talk about with the audience, first major point, is the high cost of healthcare in the US. Maybe shooting out of the stethoscope are a bunch of $100 bills. Next thing I want to hit on in my talk is that under current healthcare programs, in order to get certain things covered, sometimes we have to find a way to navigate through or cut through a lot of red tape. Maybe wrapping itself around the $100 bills is all of this red tape. So I think that should give people an idea as to how you're just creating mental note cards or mental cue cards that could remind you of maybe key points of, you know, a list of processes, procedures to be more productive on the job. Again, presentations, points when talking with clients, potential clients. So I hope that kind of makes the use case a little bit more clear.
And do you find, at least I do, but like to do it in, I find odd numbers better when I'm doing something like that, unless I just do go with 10, which I don't often in a speech, because I might do that in a written diagram when I'm going over something with people. But I find that in a speech, people can't stay with you. So I stick to 3 to 5 points. Mm-hmm. Do you find that to be true as well? Is there anything to that? Because like, I'll think either what's my strong beginning and my main point? What is my close? What I want people to leave with? And then the guts in the middle, or I will think of what's the middle and the high point of this, and then sort of do my beginning, my end, and my middle, and then work out what goes between the first and the middle, and what goes between the middle and the end. That's how I create my speeches. And it just helps me to remember everything I need to remember. I don't know. It's just like you said, I think people have found ways to sort of figure things out, but I don't know. That's how I do it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And again, it's because you have your way that you're very comfortable with that helps you to commit things to memory. Again, the good thing is for those that don't necessarily have a great strategy, or at least one that's already working really well, these techniques would be applicable. And in the case of something like the story method, the number wouldn't really matter. Actually, you could have, you know, 13 points for whatever strange reason it might have ended up being just that number of points. The story method, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13 points, it wouldn't make any difference. And there are a lot of other techniques. You know, you can memorize speeches hours in length using something called the method of loci or journey method. It actually originated with the ancient Greeks. The famous orator Cicero used this technique. So the Roman orators used it, but it originated with ancient Greeks. So there are more powerful techniques for even very, very large bodies of data. I used it to memorize more than 5,000 pieces of information about the United States Congress. People have used it to memorize entire books. Someone in the World Memory Championship memorized the entire dictionary.
Wow.
So yeah, there are more powerful techniques, but I think what we've gone over, you know, in this short interview will be enough to get people started in terms of developing memory
skills. Let's talk about just names. Like that's like such an important piece of remembering someone's name, even when you're at a party and you've been introduced to 5 people. So is it the same thing? Do you make up a story in your mind about who the person reminds you of, or what is your best strategies for that?
Yeah. So one thing you can do is come up with a visual representation of the name. So if I meet someone named Mike, I might picture a microphone. If I meet someone named Alice, I might picture a white rabbit because that reminds me of Alice in Wonderland. So some sort of visual representation of the name. Ideally, you want to also connect it to something that is unique about the person's look. So if I'm meeting a Mike, and this particular Mike to me has cool looking hair, I might imagine that the microphone is getting tangled up in his hair. So how this works is the next time you see the person, all you have to do is ask yourself, what is unique to you about their look? What you personally notice the first time you saw them is likely what you personally would notice again, and the image that you place there will come back to you immediately. That one is going to take a little bit more practice. So when I'm training people, I would actually simulate introducing them to a lot of different people, so you'll build up that skill. But let me give you four steps that anyone can put into practice right after they listen to this interview that really won't take any practice. And step number one is, when you're introduced to someone, just repeat the name right away. So if you're introduced to someone named Mike, nice to meet you, Mike, or pleased to meet you, Mike. It might seem totally obvious, but a lot of times when someone is introducing themselves to us, we don't pay any attention at all to the name. Our mind is all over the place, right? So just getting into the habit of this first step will force you to pay attention for 1 second. That's the only way you could repeat the name back to the person. Step number two will be to just use the name in a question early on. So how do you know Chester, Mike? Or how long have you been with this organization, Mike? Just use it once. That's it. I want to clarify. I don't mean use the name over and over again to where it seems a little bit weird maybe. But using it early on is going to be very helpful in reinforcing the name in your mind. Step number three, take a few seconds or less to think of a connection between the name and anything at all that you already know. So Mike might make you think of Mike Tyson. So it could be a famous person like that. It could be a character from a TV show or movie. Maybe they have the same name as this person. Maybe you have a friend or family member that is also named Mike. So thinking of a connection between the name and literally anything that you already know is going to help prevent the name from just, you know, going in one ear and out the other ear. Last step, fourth step, when you leave the meeting, the party, the wedding, whatever type of function it might be, try to say goodbye to people actually using their name. I hope to see you again sometime, Mike. That's going to go a long way toward helping you to remember the name the next time you see them in the longer term. So those four steps, I think, should be pretty easy for anyone in your audience to put into practice. Those will give you an immediate improvement in your ability to remember names. And then later on, when you can combine them with the visual type techniques that I briefly hit on, you'll definitely become better at remembering names.
I love that. And in a couple of those, I do all of the time. So I'm like, happy to hear that. But I just want our listeners, and you can reiterate this, but so when they're doing that, because some people, again, just don't see the value, but it brings a level of trust and respect. It makes people feel special. When anybody hears their name being said, it makes people feel like you care just a little bit more, or that you're paying attention, or that you're really interested in them. And this then causes better relationships. If you're there, you know, trying to accomplish something or pitch an idea, it's going to allow the person to like you more when you're using their name. So that's the added value, at least from the perspective that I've seen. And anything you'd like to add to that, I'm certainly love to hear it.
Definitely. So a lot of times in my presentations, I'll quote How to Win Friends and Influence People, which is still to this day one of the most popular business and personal success books ever written. In that book, it was written that the sweetest sound to a person in any language is the sound of their own name, and also that everyone's favorite subject is themselves. So in fact, when you remember people's names and things about them, it helps you to build better business, personal relationships. One profession that's actually really clear on the power in this, politicians become really good at this. I've worked with some politicians over the years. If people check out my Instagram, they can see some notable people that I've worked with over the past decade or so. You know, when a politician, for instance, attends a fundraiser, they would love to know ahead of time the name of people there, their spouse's name, things they like so they know what things might be beneficial to bring up in conversation, things they don't like so they know what things maybe to avoid in conversation. They're really clear on how it helps to make you more popular, more likable. In their case, it gets them probably more votes in the end and definitely more money for their campaigns at fundraisers. In your case, it might help to get more business as a business professional, consultant, entrepreneur. So there's a lot of power in remembering names. Let's also keep in mind that when you don't remember people's names, or maybe even worse, you call them by the wrong name, this can be very detrimental. So one of the main reasons why I quit my first job out of college is that even after more than a year of working there, people were still calling me by the wrong name. So this really can hurt business relationships. Another quick story that came in at one of my presentations, a guy wanted me to tell the story to benefit people in the future. He was in sales and he actually got fired because at an annual conference or, you know, two times a year conference, he accidentally the whole day was calling the vice president of sales by the wrong name. I think he was calling him by a similar name, but not the correct name. And the vice president wrote to his supervisor and said, look, in sales, remembering people's names is very, very important. This guy has to go. So he got fired. A last example that I'll give, which is a pretty extreme example. This was brought to my attention again at one of my presentations. I learn a lot from my audience. I hadn't heard the story, but I confirmed that it's absolutely true. And you people can read about this later. It's still online and on an Inc.com article. One of the factors in why Steph Curry from the Warriors, the basketball team, one of the reasons why he didn't sign back on with Nike for sponsorship is because at multiple meetings with Nike executives, they kept calling him by the wrong name. And his father is quoted in that article saying, you know what? We let it slide a couple of times, but the fact that these executives couldn't make the adjustment, you know, this showed they didn't care about him as a person. They actually made things even worse and accidentally had a slide in the presentation that was meant for a different basketball player. So he ended up signing on instead with Under Armour. And the article states that if he continues to be a popular player, that this could mean tens of billions of dollars, over $10 billion difference in market cap for Under Armour. So this is an extreme case, but sometimes billions of dollars are at stake. I think all of us know, even if billions of dollars might not be at stake for us, we instinctively know that for our VIP clients, we need, I mean, at a minimum, you have to get the name correct, right? And probably in meetings with them, you should remember things they like, things they might be allergic to, and stuff like that. So I think it's just another example of why it's important to remember people's names.
Absolutely. And one of the things I always say next to themselves and hearing about themselves and talking about themselves, people like to talk about their kids. So I always make a mental note on clients I meet, writing down, if it comes up in the conversation, their kids' names. So the next time that I meet them, I'll ask them about, instead of just, how are your kids? Like, oh, so how's Jonathan doing with his basketball? And their whole face lights up. I mean, they're like, gosh, definitely. Like, not only does she remember me, but she remembers that I have a son who's Jonathan and he likes to play basketball. And it makes a huge, huge difference in how people respond to you. This has been really, really great, Chester. So one of our signature questions of the show is, what does working from your happy place mean to you?
Yes, I think that working from my happy place for me means developing my skills to the highest degree that I can and leveraging those skills to help others. So a big part of it is making an impact in the world, helping other people to become more successful in their lives, both business, personal lives, and also if I can, even help out their kids and maybe grandkids in school. Really, that is the best part of what I do and why I feel that now I am working from my happy place as opposed to when I was working for someone else in Silicon Valley, I wasn't. So I hope that is clear as to what I feel it means to work from my happy place.
That is great. So if people are wanting, so do you have a book? Do you have a course? If people are saying, I do want to help my grandkids with this, or I do want to help my kids have better study skills, is there some places where they can follow your strategies, learn your tips? Do you have courses, or how can they figure that out?
Yes, the best way to go about it, if people would like to further develop their memory skills and leverage these skills in business, personal life, and to help out kids, memoryschool.net would be the URL to visit. I would visualize maybe a giant fishing net to remember that it's .net. So memoryschool.net, and I set up code HAPPY. In honor of being on your show, I set it up to be valid for 50 uses. So it should work for the first 50 people to enter that on the checkout screen. The enrollment fee should go from $200 down to $0. There is a monthly access fee. So that's all you would pay, and like any other sort of membership, of course, you can cancel at any time.
Okay, perfect. Well, this has been so much fun. It's been a delightful interview. Thank you so much for giving of your time today, your expertise and your wisdom. And thanks for helping people. I love that. That's for me, that's working from my happy place too, is when I know that other people are benefiting to go on and sort of take it forward, you know, pay it forward.
Thank you so much for having me, Belinda. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Great. To all our listeners, thank you so much for joining us once again on Work From Your Happy Place. Don't forget to subscribe or follow, and please refer us to a friend. That is our greatest compliment that we can receive. We'll see you next time on Work From Your Happy Place.